Welcome everybody back to another episode of Tattoos, Code, and Data Flows. Very excited for my guest today, Jason Rebholz from Corvus Insurance. He's the CISO of the organization. We're going to have a pretty interesting conversation around cyber insurance and how it can be used within your organization. Hope you enjoy the episode.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Welcome, Jason. Really excited to have you on the podcast today. Just so the audience gets to know you, why don't you give a little bit of background on who you are, what you've been doing, and kind of what is the world according to Jason?
Yeah, great. Well, thanks for having me, Matt. Really appreciate it. So my name is Jason Rebholz. I'm the Chief Information Security Officer at Corvus Insurance, who is a cyber insurance insurtech. So my background, really born and raised in incident response. I spent over a decade investigating nation-state threats like Russia, China, doing a lot with hacktivists and a lot with financially motivated crime, especially with credit card theft. And through that, was introduced to the insurance world, of all things, and had found myself at a cyber insurance carrier, not only protecting us as a company, but also looking at how we can better protect all of our policyholders and better assess and identify the risks.
No, that's awesome. It must keep you kind of busy these days. Cyber insurance is a hot button item to talk about.
Oh yeah, there's a lot there, a lot to unpack.
That's awesome. So why don't we jump into this and start off with our thinking out loud section?
Great.
Thinking out loud, maybe we found love right where we are.
So Jason, your background, day-to-day activities, you know, what's top of mind for you when you get up and go to the office or go to your office in your house with the way the world is today? You know, what is kind of making the gears turn within your mind?
Yeah, so because of my role, I have kind of a unique perspective on things. You know, not only am I focused on the internal security of our company, but it's also around how do you assess the risk of companies at scale? And so it's something that's pretty unique to cyber insurance in particular, because you know it's not as easy as going through and doing a full-on assessment or you know plugging in a couple tools and looking at that output. You really have to take some creative ways and try to understand how can you bring tech to this to get better perspective. And so everything that's top of mind for me is, you know, how can I take what I do day in and day out as a CISO and understanding where our risk is? And how can I take everything that I know from doing incident response where threat actors are breaking into environments and deploying ransomware or stealing data? And how do you do that at scale across tens of thousands of companies to assess risk in under a minute? And then, you know, as you go through a policy period with them over the course of a year, how can you continue to monitor risk and just raise the alarms on you know, the high risk vulnerabilities and just significant gaps in the security posture that an attacker could exploit and could lead to a security incident?
No, absolutely. And there's so many different flavors of incidents you're probably, you know, worried about. So there's different processes, different tooling across the board. So I definitely could see that. How do you normalize all that data into one kind of threat landscape, if you will? So totally understand. That's, you know, the cyber insurance really, you know, is fascinating to me. And I'll get into that in a later section when I get to ask you some questions. But this is more your time to kind of talk about what your passions are. So which moves us to our next section, which is really the rant sessions.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now you're going to hear about it.
You probably see it out there talking to all these people. Not only internally, but externally about risk, you know, what really ticks you off in the industry? Is it, you know, people just buying a product and not using it correctly? What kind of really gets you really bothered?
Yeah. So
based on what you've seen,
it really starts with marketing. And that seems like such a cop-out answer. But, you know, what I'm seeing is that nobody knows what they're actually buying today. And there's a lot of empty promises. And there's just a lot of false advertising on the solutions that are being bought. You know, just look at EDR and XDR as a solution. That means so many different things to so many different people. And especially for the small and mid-sized businesses, it's really difficult for them to really understand what it is they're getting. And when it gets touted as a, you know, kind of one-stop shop, hey, just plug it in and you're good to go, you quickly realize that that's where a lot of the security gaps start popping up, because just because you buy it and you install it doesn't mean that it's configured properly. And so, you know, that's where we see a lot of security incidents are just starting up from people who don't know how to use the technology appropriately, whether it's a force multiplier. So if it's some sort of IT tool, you know, cloud-based, whatever it is, or a security tool, it's opening up a lot of holes and creating a lot of assumptions on your security posture that attackers are frankly just starting to take full advantage of.
Yeah, it's interesting too, and I totally agree with, you know, just buying a bleeding edge solution doesn't mean you're any more secure. I mean, think about, you know, the breach of the retail chain that has a Target. Oh, sorry, I just messed it up. A bullseye as their logo. Sorry. Whoops. They had the best of breed, but they just weren't configured correctly and they weren't looking at the data. So just having a solution doesn't really mean that you're more
secure. Exactly. And I can't tell you the number of times that we've gone in and done investigations before where the alerts were there. You know, all the signs were present, but it comes down to either the tech wasn't configured properly. So in the company that's a bullseye, right? In that situation, they didn't have the tool configured to block. And they weren't following up on the alerts. And so those things compound very, very quickly. And that's usually how you find yourself as a headline is when, you know, those security gaps just add up and compound over time.
Yeah, it's usually death by 1,000 paper cuts equals a major breach. Exactly. Is the way I always like to see it. Yeah. Yeah, so that's not really an issue until you put it in concert with these other issues. Now you get a big problem to deal with, and people don't see it that way.
Sometimes. Yeah, I think the security gets oversimplified so often, right? You know, it's a very complex topic. And yes, there are the basics that almost no one follows. So that's always a fun challenge. But it's so complex. There's so many depths to it where, you know, just if you're looking at one narrow swim lane, you're going to end up missing something. And so I see this all too often where a lot of security practitioners, they get so laser focused on a narrow scope of view, and they really start to miss the larger picture of things. And that's where you start seeing the compounding issues of security with configurations and everything else. You know, security is not just about solving one specific problem or buying one specific technology. It's really the holistic approach to securing your environment.
Absolutely. Well, that's awesome. Great information. So we'll move into our next section where we kind of do the opposite side. If you had a magic wand, what would you fix in the industry? As a CISO of a cyber insurance company, what would you, you know, totally just say, okay, we're going to not do that anymore. We're going to do it like this because what you're doing is wrong. So, and you can say whatever you want. It could be like fixed marketing material. It can be anything. So the floor is yours.
Yeah. So, you know, again, I think this goes back to me where the main thing that I'm looking at right now is how do you try to solve cybersecurity risk at scale? And so, you know, there's this delicate balance today of how much information is somebody going to share with an insurance carrier? And how much of that information is the insurance carrier going to understand, right? And because you just have people speaking six different languages. So, you know, my nirvana, my perfect world is where we can have just an agreed upon terminology and trust that's being built between the two types of organizations. Because at the end of the day, with cyber insurance, there is almost no other company in the world that's going to have a similar vetted interest in you not having a security incident. So, you know, that should bring trust inherently, but it doesn't today, right? And so I think if we can start addressing that and start allowing better communication and better integrations between, hey, these are this is my tech stack, right? And, you know, this is how we know it's securing our organization. These are the metrics associated with it. You know, that common language, that common framework, to bring everyone together, you know, I think that's where we can really start seeing things shift. And we're starting to see the early days of that now, where you have a lot of insurance carriers that are starting to mandate specific controls, just like, you know, MFA, EDR, you know, secure backups. And we're starting to see the positive ramifications of that, meaning fewer ransoms being paid. We're starting to see, you know, a slowdown in certain types of attacks. And so, you know, that's, in my mind, that's how you start tackling security across every single industry by using that unifying force of cyber insurance, which no one would ever say in the first, and I never thought I would be saying that either, right? But like, you know, there's just something to be said of that common interest there and driving towards a more secure future.
Oh, absolutely. And I just find it interesting that we're still talking about the integrations, automations, and streamlining. Today, I've been in this industry, you know, almost 20 years now, and I'm like, we're still struggling with that same conversation. It's just, it's comical, and we're still looking for the same type of bugs. That's our security issues.
Well, I think that's the crazy thing, right? It's, you know, insurance is a very old industry, right? But the cyber insurance aspect of it is very, very young. But, you know, I've been doing security long enough, and I've seen just thousands of different types of incidents, and you just come to realize that it really is a small number of ingredients that go into an attack. And if you can narrow down on those basics, just, you know, patching, right? You know, secure identification, yeah, understanding what's in your environment, right? You know, these are the basics of basics that in a lot of situations, you don't need to have a big investment for. But, you know, it's tough when, especially for SMBs, where they don't know where to start. And so they just look for the thing that looks shiny or that, you know, some salesperson is telling them is going to solve all their security challenges. And again, they just get that tunnel vision. They lose sight of just really building out the proper foundation there.
Awesome. Well, let's move into our next section with the speed round. I asked you some really short questions just to get your opinion before we go into the deeper questions. Because he's going the distance. He's going for speed. As a, you know, Sitesolver cybersecurity company, what is the must-have technology when you're talking about a company that's looking for insurance? Is there one technology or is there a list of technologies that they must have for you to say, okay, yes, we'll write you a policy? Or is it kind of all?
I'll give you the top three. It's going to be EDR, MFA, and backups. You know, that's going to hit the major things to help prevent ransomware or at least mitigate ransomware and your business email compromise.
Awesome. And then probably going to answer the same way on this one. What is the biggest thing that you see as an issue people coming to you for? Is it ransomware or is it something similar?
Ransomware and business email compromise are the top two, hands down.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's probably what I expected. You know, thinking about types of organizations and what they're doing, do you feel that if somebody says we are in a our development shift left or shift everywhere, do you look for a kind of a key word there to say, okay, where are you inserting security into the DevOps ecosystem? Do you ask questions like that, or is that kind of just
This is, I think, one of the key challenges with insurance, right? It's typically lagging about 5 years behind where the reality of environments are going. So, you know, when you're looking at insurance applications, there are zero questions related to AppSec. You know, it's what there's just not the requisite knowledge in the industry yet. And yeah, I think more importantly, the losses haven't outgrown some of the other types of losses. Said another way, the pain hasn't been felt yet. Now, is that right? No, it's absolutely wrong. Right. But, you know, when I look to the future of cyber insurance, you know, I think we are going to get, if I have anything to do with it, is really focusing in on that shift left mentality, right? Because that really starts highlighting the maturity of a security program. You know, are you just purely reactive or are you actively building this in to your processes to take this seriously?
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally agree with that. And I mean, it's about not just the technology, but the plans and how you actually execute on those plans is kind of in lockstep with actually being secure. So totally understand that. So, I mean, from a question as a CISO, are there other CISOs? Who in the industry do you look up to? Who do you follow on social or read their books or articles or white papers? Or are there a few people or a group of people that you really like to hear what they have to say?
So I don't know if I could pick just one. You know, I tend to
pick a few.
So somebody that that I respect and have always looked up to, and it's a little bit biased because I used to work with him, is Dave D'Amato. I think he's been on the bleeding edge of security, and he's got a proven track record of going into some fairly large organizations and really driving positive security change. And, you know, I would say it's really the ones that I look up to the most are really anyone that's at a cloud native tech focused company, because, you know, for me, I grew up in infrastructure where you had heavy on premise. Right. And so I'm just beginning my journey in more cloud native organizations and just overall product security. And so, you know, it's looking at anyone who's been there before me that I can learn from. Like those are going to be my heroes.
Yep. No, absolutely. And I mean, I find different nuggets of information from different people. And it's just kind of to go very, very wide in terms of the expertise, because you may not agree with everything, but something may be a nugget of information that is truly
exactly
valuable.
Yeah. You know, it's, and I think the cool thing with CISOs is that it's a very close-knit group of individuals. You know, there are several groups that I'm in where you can just freely talk about, hey, I'm having this issue. How should I try to address this? You know, what are you seeing? Right. And it's just an invaluable resource for anyone. You know, I'm a first-time CISO, right? So even though I've done security for over a decade, yeah. I'd be lying if I said I knew exactly what I was doing, right? And so that's where you have to stand on the shoulders of giants. And when you have that type of support group, it really allows you the ability to just pick off the expertise of anyone that's been there, done that. That's what saves time and helps you avoid the landmines.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, let's move into our expert witness, where I'm going to ask you a few questions. So you are my expert witness.
Your Honor, I move to disqualify Ms. Vito as an expert witness.
Can you answer the question?
No, it is a trick question.
So let's start with something that I'm fascinated with. And I mean, I've been in application security or, cybersecurity for, as I said, 20 years, give or take, and people want from a solution or a product, what is the ROI? How much money is this going to save me? And I always say that any software application security or software is insurance itself. So it's like you're hoping to protect yourself of the unknown. How are people going from that purchase of a tool or a platform or a, MSP or something like that, to cyber insurance? When do they actually make that decision not to just invest internally, but to actually cover themselves with cyber insurance?
So I think it happens early on. And I think the important thing to understand here is that a lot of the insurance purchases are not happening through the security department. They're happening through a CFO, so the finance department or a risk department. So it's looked at as a general extension of a lot of the other types of insurance that an organization would get, whether that's, errors and omissions, D&O, anything like that. So, the kind of give and take that I see is that organizations will start and just get a general policy. And, over the last couple of years, the cyber insurance industry has, we'll say, gone through a rough patch, right? Where a lot of learnings that, led to a lot of changes in the types of coverage and the costs of a policy. And so that really started forcing a more direct conversation internally around, okay, how are we really using cyber insurance, right? And, I think historically it was looked at as that risk transfer where it's like, well, we don't need to invest as much because we have mm-hmm. cybersecurity insurance. And so, we're good. If something happens, we'll just rely on them. And now the cost is becoming more of a driving factor in that decision. And so now it's like, okay, well, how can we start investing some of that into our preventative measures? And just as you said, what's going to give us our return on investment? And by the way, with cyber insurance, now there's mandated controls. So, there are just certain investments that companies are going to have to make to meet that bar. And so I think that discussion is starting to merge with how do we secure our environment and how do we leverage cyber insurance as a tool in our tool belt here to ensure that we're just more secure across the edge. Because at the end of the day, cyber insurance is meant to be there as a break in case of emergency type situation, right? In a perfect world, you don't have to use it, but you can leverage a lot of the resources that they have, whether it's just relationships with vendors that you can get discounts or, just learning from what cyber insurance carriers are seeing. Because there are very few organizations outside of, your DFIR firms or your privacy council that specializes in breach response that are going to be that aggregation point of understanding what's the root cause of attacks, where are the trends going?
Yeah. Oh, very interesting. And so another kind of theoretical question I'm curious about is, I had homeowner's insurance and in a 18-month period, I had major hail damage, I had two water leaks, and I was deemed uninsurable, and I had to go find this special insurance. Do you see things or companies that you are denying insurance because they're just deemed too risky or they're just not doing the right things? And you say, nope, we don't want to talk to you. Or somebody has a breach and they're uninsurable. I mean, just curious about if that type of same story exists.
It's certainly there, and I think we've seen more of that in the last 5 years or so, especially with ransomware. When you do have a claim, you're going to be put under the microscope. Right. And so, it's an opportunity, first of all, to work mm-hmm. with your insurance carrier to show, hey, we're taking this seriously. Right. We're investing in security. These are the lessons mm-hmm. we've learned. And this is what we're trying to do to address it moving forward. Now, ultimately, the insurance carrier might say, hey, good for you. We're glad that you're doing that. But, it's not within our risk appetite anymore. And so that pushes the burden over to the insurance broker and that policyholder to find somewhere to live. And so, there's so many different cyber insurance carriers are out there. Some of them are going to have different risk appetites, and it becomes more of a conversation of, all right, well, your cost of insurance might go up, And there are some companies that are just opting to self-insure because, you know, they've had so many incidents or they're too much of a target, and that's getting reflected in their overall premiums.
No, gotcha. It's just interesting to think about it. You know, it's like insurance is something that you never want to use, but when you use it, you tend to get dinged. It just doesn't matter what it is.
That's what I'm looking to change, right? Because insurance doesn't have to be painful, right? You know, you want that just easy experience. You want to know what you bought, right? And so, you know, just as for less technical people looking in at security professionals, they think that we're speaking different languages and that, you know, we're just, it's the most complex thing in the world. It's the same with insurance, right? And so a lot of times people don't know what they bought. And, you know, a lot of the issues could have been avoided from the get-go. You know, one of the things that I used to do was business recovery post-ransomware incident. And one of the issues that I saw pop up all the time was organizations would freak out and they would say, well, we got to rebuild our whole environment. And it's like, well, wait a second. Like, you don't need to do that, first of all. There's a better way we can do it, a more efficient way. And if you go and do that, it might not be covered by insurance. And so you found a lot of companies that would go through these recovery efforts and, you know, basically go from driving, you know, a Ford Pinto to a Ferrari and then wondering, well, you know, why wasn't that covered? It's like, well, that's not the point of cyber insurance, right? And so you really just have to it goes back to our tool discussion, right? You really have to understand what you're buying. And you have to put it in place the way that it's meant to be put in place so that you can maximize the return on value of that.
No, awesome stuff. So another question, you know, a lot of people that listen to the podcast either are equivalent CISOs or striving in their career to be a CISO. Maybe give a little hint or a little bit of advice to people that are wanting to be a CISO. And you said you were a first-time CISO in your current role. You know, what does that path look like? You know, what are the things you should be doing to potentially get to that type of role?
So I think it's going to be different for everyone. You know, when I was making the decision to become a CISO, I never sought out to do that in the first place. You know, I was all in on incident response. I got burned out and started looking at alternatives. And so I was really focused on, you know, how can I solve security at large? And so for me, you know, it was the first step was understanding what type of role you're looking for, right? I was a career consultant. Mm-hmm. And so I knew going into this that if I were just going to be focused on internal security, it wasn't going to be the right fit for me. And so I knew I had to take more of a, you know, kind of field CISO or marketing type CISO where it's focused on not only internal security, but also the customer as well, because that for me was a driving force. And so, you know, with my background in incident response, it wasn't a straightforward path to become a CISO because, you know, a lot of the current ones, they've been in industry. You know, they started as, either mm-hmm. doing GRC or in a SOC and worked their way up. You know, maybe they start as a security engineer. And so I think we're just at the early stages now where you're having this class of incident responders that really understand the practical side of security versus more of the, you know, call it the academic or just, you know, the textbook of, hey, we're going to put these controls in place and you're going to just check the boxes. And so I think for anyone that's looking into it, you know, one, it doesn't really matter where you've come up in the industry. The most important thing is how do you tie the technology with the business? Because at the end of the day, that's the role of a CISO in my mind is, you know, how do you enable the business to do their jobs while mitigating the risk? And so it should never be a conversation of, no, we absolutely can't do this. You know, that's going to come up from time to time, but you want to use that sparingly, right? And it's more of, yeah, let me educate you on the risks and provide you alternatives that we can accomplish the same objectives in a much more mindful and secure manner. And let me put some other compensating controls in place. And by the way, this is going to cost money. So, you know, how do you translate all of these things to dollars that the business is going to understand and be able to forecast for?
No, got it. And I mean, it's definitely a complicated job. And I've seen different flavors of CISOs out there, more of the, you know, business head, more of the technologist. So it's definitely a little different personality.
100%. Yeah. And I think every organization, you got to really understand what type of CISO that you need, right? There, when you're dealing with some of like the financial industry and banking, like you need somebody that's going to understand compliance and lives, breathes, and need that because that's the majority of their world. And, you know, at the same time, it's looking at somebody that can actually build teams, right? Because I've seen this before where somebody will go all in on a hardcore technical CISO, and great, they'll do an excellent job of, you know, securing your applications or your infrastructure, whatever it is. But they might leave a scorched earth behind them because they don't have as much of the people skills, which you have to have that balance, in my mind at least, to be truly successful in this type of role.
Awesome. Now, one more question for you. You know, as a CISO, I'm always about bleeding edge technologies in the AST space. You know, have you heard about application security posture management in any of your readings or anything like that? Well, what's your take on it? If you haven't heard about it, that's great too. Or, you know, give me your thoughts and about new technologies that are popping up to help, you know, within, you know, very aggressive.
Yeah, you know, it's something that I've heard of and have been researching largely because, you know, we're a cloud native company and, you know, we're building apps, right? And so, I honestly stumbled into it as, you know, we were exploring our cloud security posture and looking at some of the CSPM tools and some of the workload protection, and, you know, stumbled into the app side of it. And, you know, as we build out our AppSec program, I've been really impressed with some of the technology that's out there that almost gives you the building blocks, right? Because a lot of this is trying to understand, mm-hmm. you know, one, what's the framework for trying to create an AppSec program? What are the tools that you need? And most importantly, and I think this is where ASPM comes into play, is like, how do I actually understand what the risks are and prioritize them accordingly? Because I'm not going to be able to do everything. So how do I really prioritize them accordingly?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always say that it's like, you know, a critical CVE is the same score. Which one do you fix first? You need the context of how it's, you know, used
exactly.
within the architecture of your application. So it's the priority.
Yeah, and yeah, you know, to your point too, it's understanding what that awesome. Blast radius is. Like where is the issue in your environment? Because
yep.
not all threats are created equal. And so you really have to understand where it is,
Agreed.
What it is, and what that impact is, because, you know, security is all about fighting fires, and, you know, you can't be in a continuous firefight mode. You know, you really got to understand where's the blaze, the biggest blaze, where is it going? And how can we try to avoid these problems by having, you know, by shifting left, right? Versus having to deal with the reactionary mode that, you know, is incident response. You know, that's a decade of my life that I'd never need to revisit. I'd rather just get ahead of these problems.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. That was our expert witness session, and we're coming to a close. It is closing time.
Closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay.
Promote something you're passionate in. It could be a charity, it could be a, you know, a sports league, whatever you're passionate about. Doesn't have to be specifically around your roles as responsibilities as a CISO or your career. So, you know, the floor is yours to kind of promote.
Yeah, you know, I would
people.
Say the biggest thing is, you know, just jump into security right now. There's a lot of discussion right now on how do you start your career in cybersecurity? You know, what do you need to do? The most important thing in my mind is just don't over-engineer it, right? If you want to get into cybersecurity, find a landing spot and just try as much as you can. You'll figure out what you're passionate about and just, you know, really go forward. And there's some good mentorship programs that are starting to come out. And I think it's going to have a lot of valuable return on people who are just starting out their security careers.
Well, thank you very much. It was great having you on as a guest. A great conversation. Really appreciate your time taking out of your busy schedule.
Great.
And
thanks, Matt.
That's a wrap for today. Thank you. That's a wrap on another episode of Tattoos, Code, and Data Foes. I want to thank my guest, Jason, for taking time to have a great conversation around cyber insurance and a bunch of other areas. Please like, subscribe, and watch the podcast. Listen to the podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. Stay cheeky, application security world.